This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Nabil Biagio, and here's what's coming up.
Because of crisis, you have an entire generation who basically doesn't have access to basic services, who doesn't have access to the minimum of food.
That's Charles Bernie Mullen, head of the Regional Office for West and Central Africa for the Office of the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, on how the Sahel crisis is getting worse. This and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. As you may have heard, Buckingham Palace is concerned for the health of 96-year-old Queen Elizabeth after a medical evaluation yesterday. Its statement said doctors have recommended the Queen remain under medical supervision at Balmoral Castle in Scotland, her summer home. The BBC reported Thursday that Prince Charles and other members of the royal family are traveling to Balmoral to be with the Queen. Prime Minister Liz Truss tweeted that the whole country is deeply concerned by the news, adding, "My thoughts and the thoughts of people across our United Kingdom are with Her Majesty the Queen and her family at this time." For more on the situation in the UK, I'm joined live from London by Henry Ridgewell. Welcome to the program, Henry.
Good to be with you.
What is the latest from Scotland? What are the doctors saying?
We haven't had any further detail from the palace or from the Queen's doctors since they put out that statement at about just after midday local time, where they said that following further evaluation this morning, the doctors are concerned for Her Majesty's health and have recommended she remain under medical supervision. There were no further details of what condition they are concerned about. We know that the Queen has been suffering from mobility problems over the summer, and she has stayed at her royal residence in Balmoral in Scotland, where she is today. The statement went on to say the Queen remains comfortable. So that's all the detail we have from the doctors themselves. But given that the palace normally understates, to put it mildly, any statement about the health of any member of the royal family, this has triggered some concern, understandably, in the language they have used to say that the doctors were concerned. Plus, of course, the fact that many members, close members of the royal family, have travelled and have arrived at Balmoral in the last few hours to
so
be by
they
the
have
Queen's
arrived
side,
already.
Reinforces
so
that concern.
Yes. What is the sentiment in London where you are and across the UK?
I think it's a feeling of great concern and of worry and of hope that the Queen will overcome these latest health issues, as she has many other times. But also, I think beyond that, a sense of history, if you like, of a reflection on exactly how important a figure the Queen is for Britain and what her passing might mean for the country itself. She's a figure who has gone beyond politics, beyond the cut and thrust of everyday life, and has been a bedrock, really, for the country and for admired greatly and respected around the world. And so many people are very concerned, seeing this as a possible historical moment. There are crowds gathering outside Buckingham Palace. There are some crowds outside Balmoral Castle itself, some in Windsor, the royal residence there. People already in tears at the news of the Queen's ill health.
Like you mentioned, the Queen is probably one of the most famous humans, if not the most famous human alive today. But the last few years have been difficult on her, with the loss of her husband and health issues. How has she been faring?
It's been very difficult for her in recent years. It's been an eventful and a tumultuous decade for the royal family. Really, looking back to the marriage of Prince William and Kate, and then the marriage of Harry and Meghan, it seemed as if Elizabeth was at the head of a family that was moving with the times, that it was popular, global, diverse. And then you had these series of problems. You had the investigations into Prince Andrew over his links with the convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. You had the falling out of Harry and Meghan with the royal family over allegations of racism, and they're moving to the United States. And then, of course, as you say, the death of her husband, Prince Philip, in 2021, and that lingering, harrowing image of the Queen mourning alone at the height of the coronavirus pandemic at the chapel in Windsor. And so it has been a difficult time for her. As you say, her health has been difficult, particularly over the last 12 months. We know she's had mobility issues, problems with her legs. That explains why she is in Scotland now. She stays up there over the summer rather than traveling to London. That's where she appointed Liz Truss as Britain's new Prime Minister just 2 days ago.
Just 2 days ago. And thank you, Henry Ridgewell.
We wait to hear exactly what further news will come from Balmoral.
Thank you very much for being with us, Henry Ridgewell from London.
Thanks for having me on the show.
A grain shipment from Ukraine arrived yesterday in Ethiopia, where a record drought and reignited civil war have left millions of people facing daily hunger. Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA's Africa News Tonight in Nairobi, Kenya.
Some 23,000 tons of Ukrainian wheat arrived in Djibouti by ship late last month. Now, truck have delivered a portion of that wheat to the World Food Programme's main warehouse in Ethiopia, where food aid is desperately needed. The World Food Programme said the 23,000 tons of grain is enough to feed 1.5 million people on full rations for a month. Some of the grain is destined for Somalia, which, like the rest of the Horn of Africa, is reeling from severe drought. While it is not clear how much grain is going to Ethiopia, the WFP has said it hopes to reach 11.5 million Ethiopians in need by the end of 2022. The WFP said food need to continue to flow in for that to happen. Ukrainian food exports were cut off for months until Ukraine and Russia reached a UN-backed agreement last month to open a corridor for the free flow of food shipments. The WFP says this is the first humanitarian aid shipment from Ukraine to arrive in Ethiopia under the agreement. Ethiopia is experiencing drought and conflict in the northern Tigray region, which have put more than 20 million people nationwide in need of humanitarian assistance. The recently renewed clashes between the government forces and the rebel Tigray People's Liberation Front have displaced more people, and the lack of access to some areas has complicated relief efforts. Mohammed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
The prospect of rolling out a malaria vaccine next year gives hope to millions of people around the world, especially in Africa and parts of Asia, where the malaria parasite is still among the top causes of infant and child mortality. Dr. Elisha Osati is an internal medicine specialist who tells me the trials conducted in his home country of Tanzania, as well as Burkina Faso and other parts of Africa, show that the malaria vaccine is promising.
There is a promising malaria vaccine that program that has been done in Sierra Leone for quite some time. 1 year ago, there was a good news from Sierra Leone, actually the study that they are doing with a group from Oxford, that the malaria vaccine, the M vaccine, is showing the promising of up to 70% of inducing immunity against malaria. Between June 2nd and July 2nd last year, they also introduced the booster dose to participants who received the malaria vaccine. And again, it shows that there is also improvement in terms of inducing immunity against malaria to 80%.
This information is correct, how big of a change would an effective malaria vaccine make?
We understand in tropical countries like basically in Africa, like Tanzania, in ancient countries like in India, the malaria is so rampant. So the introduction of this vaccine will help us a lot in fighting against malaria, because, you know, malaria is the top five, among the top five causes of, for example, childhood mortality. Under five mortality, malaria is contributing a lot, like including Karamin Narande, it's on the top of the list among five causes of neonatal and childhood mortality. So introducing this vaccine will really help us fight against malaria in our setting, because we've been using a lot of different methods to fight malaria, including the environmental cleaning and sometimes spraying the sprays like DDT. Again, we are most relying on treatment. When somebody gets with malaria, then we treat it with anti-malarials. But if we get the vaccine, I think that can help us a lot fight against malaria.
The trials in Burkina Faso, which involve three shots and a booster for children, they say proved to be 80% mm-hmm. effective. What did we learn about, you know, that process, three shots and a booster? What does it tell us about logistics, accessibility, affordability once the vaccine is out and rolled?
Yeah, I think firstly the trial itself, I think the trial was very well conducted, because they had three different groups with three different doses and one group for control. Two groups of different doses and one group for comparison, the control group. So I think it followed the procedures for trial, and actually they also reported that the safety was very high in the trial. Of course, there are some of children develop clinical malaria after the vaccine, but if you compare with those who got the immunity, we say that the trial was well conducted and was well controlled. I think it is well, and I know in some of part of Africa laboratories that are going on, even in Tanzania, we have trials that are going on. And so this one will highlight much on the vaccine, and I think we as a country can learn from this trial in Burkina Faso.
That's Dr. Elisha Osati speaking with me from Dar es Salaam this past hour. A senior UN official is warning Africa's volatile Sahel region risks becoming a forgotten crisis because of the many competing emergencies around the world. The head of the Regional Office for West and Central Africa for the Office of the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Charles Bernie Mullin, expressed his concerns in an interview with VOA's Lisa Schlein.
Charles Bernie Mullin told VOA this week that millions of people in six Sahel countries, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Chad, Mali, Niger, and Nigeria, need international support to survive. The official, based in Dakar, Senegal, told VOA he drummed this message home in meetings with donor countries here in Geneva. He said 18.6 million people face acute hunger, with many on the brink of starvation. He said 7.7 million children under the age of five are malnourished, including nearly 2 million who are severely malnourished and risk dying without prompt treatment. The region's growing needs, he said, are largely ignored because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the war in Ukraine, and other crises around the world. While the world is not looking, he said, the Sahel crisis is worsening.
Because of crisis, you have an entire generation who basically doesn't have access to basic services, who doesn't have access to the minimum of food or the minimum of health, access to school protection, and who, in certain cases, those people are even kidnapped, killed.
Bernie Mullin said the combination of conflict and violence, deep poverty, weak governance, and the impact of climate change is driving millions of people to the fringes of survival. Ocha said armed conflict and violent extremism in the region have forced millions to abandon their land and homes. It said fighting by jihadists and other armed groups in Burkina Faso has displaced nearly 2 2 million people. Bernie Moland said the ongoing violence has triggered an unprecedented exodus from rural to urban areas, noting that those abandoning their land cannot cultivate their crops or feed themselves and their families.
Displaced people, people who don't have any place to go, that have to quit their village and have to be accommodated either in camps, something that we try to avoid, or something in other community, in other villages. Those communities are affected by the crisis. They are displaced. They need access to food, water, sanitation, health, and education. That's really the priority.
While more than 30 million Sahelians need assistance and protection, Bernie Moland said only a third of the UN's $4.1 billion appeal for its humanitarian operation was funded. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. French officials have closed a probe looking into the country's responsibility for the Rwandan genocide in 1994. A statement by the French prosecutor's office says it found no evidence of the direct participation of France and therefore refused to open a case into the issue. The magistrate said they had found nothing indicating the involvement of the army in abuses committed in refugee camps or in assisting the perpetrators. Over 800,000 people were killed in the genocide, which was carried out by a Hutu-led government against perceived enemies, minority Tutsis and moderate Hutus. Reuters notes that in March 2021, an independent commission of historians absolved France of direct involvement, but said French officials had been blinded by colonial attitude that prevented Paris from foreseeing the slaughter, and that the French government bore, in its word, serious and overwhelming responsibility. In May 2021, prosecutors said there were no grounds to pursue legal claims that France bore responsibility for the killings. South African police have released the identities and photographs of five men they say perpetrated one of the worst mass killings in the country's democratic history. In the early hours of Sunday, 10 July, men armed with rifles and pistols burst into a tavern in Soweto near Johannesburg and opened fire. They shot dead 16 people and wounded many others. Police say the suspects are Lesotho nationalists, or rather Lesotho nationals, drawing criticism from groups concerned it could spark attacks on foreigners in South Africa. Darren Taylor reports.
The police say they're unsure of the motive behind the mass shooting, but they suspect five Basotho men are responsible. Basotho is the ethnic group of most people living in Lesotho, the tiny mountainous kingdom surrounded by South Africa. Political analyst Thembisa Fakude says he understands that the police want to show citizens they're doing their job well, but he thinks it's premature and dangerous to publicly link the suspects with a particular country.
That profiling, for me, could be problematic because we could be jumping a gun. There might be South Africans, we don't know, but I don't think we should jump into conclusions as many have done in South Africa, because it might just create tensions which we've seen flaring up in the past couple of months, particularly those of xenophobia, because what's insinuated here is that
anti-foreigner sentiment's been building in South Africa for the past few months, fueled in part by several high-profile crimes allegedly committed by undocumented migrants. In July, illegal miners, known as Zama Zamas in South Africa, allegedly gang-raped eight women near the town of Krugersdorp. Seven men, some who are Lesotho citizens, have been charged with the crime. The government also sparked anger recently when it extended residence and work permits of almost 200,000 Zimbabweans. Over the past few years, the country has dealt with an unemployment rate of over 30% and soaring violent crime. Some South Africans and a few political parties accuse foreigners of stealing jobs and of being criminals. Fakude says given the tensions, the police need to be more careful. He says police must avoid scapegoating foreign nationals.
We also need to be careful of not mentioning the nationality of those that are involved in these crimes, because, you know, there are a sizable number of people coming from different countries in Southern Africa who are legitimate in this country and who are doing good work, contributing towards our economy, etc. So there is that handful who often tend to mess up the image of a much more bigger group. So we have to be careful on our...
Police Minister Becky Trele says officers released the nationalities of the suspects because that information could help to track them down. He says he won't apologize for doing all he can to bring criminals to justice, including naming their countries of origin. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the new school year started on Monday, but in the east of the country, a number of students haven't resumed classes. The schools of some are occupied by displaced persons, while others are in villages occupied by M23 rebels. Reporter Zanim Neti Zaidi has the details.
A large number of students and school children have not returned to school in Ruchuru, a territory in the province of North Kivu. It is also the scene of clashes between the Congolese army and M23 rebels. To demonstrate their anger, the displaced children demonstrated on Monday to demand an end to the war in the region, a solution that would allow them to continue their studies. 13-year-old Lucien Sabimana is more than 25 kilometers from his village, which is occupied by the rebels. He is one about 90,000 displaced by violence. Lucien says he regrets not being able to go back to school. He says that it is difficult for him to study. He and his family live in a school classroom in very poor conditions. He says that it hurts him when he sees other children like him going to school while he cannot. He asks the authorities to end insecurity. 15-year-old Francine feels the same way. She reveals that she did not study last year in what she says is a nightmare that is likely to be repeated over and over again. She says she left the village of Jomba and didn't even finish school last year because of the war. She says she regrets that she risks losing another school year because peace has not yet returned to her village. The parents of the students also suffer. Many displaced adults beg or work of others in the area. They worry about their children who have not returned to school and are asking the authorities to act quickly. Sifa Sengiyumva has six children, all of whom have not yet resumed their studies. She says that she is going through a lot of difficulties, including illness and hunger. She says that now that her children cannot study, she asks the authorities to seek a solution to the war so that they can return to their villages. For an elected official of the territory, the discontent of these children is an expression of the suffering they endure. Emmanuel Muhozi, the provincial deputy, asks the authorities to consider all measures to put an end to the insecurity that has impacted the education of children. He says that as a member of parliament, he continues to ask the authorities to act responsibly and to use all of their might so that parents and their children can return to their homes. Since March, violence has erupted in Rutshuru territory, where M23 rebels have clashed with the armed forces of the Democratic Republic of Congo, driving thousands of civilians to flee. From Goma, I'm Zanem Netizaidi for VOA News.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of producer Nadia Faha and engineer Adrius Regis, thank you for tuning in and for choosing The Voice of America.